Welcome to Philosophy for the Real World. I'm Professor Thomas White. Think of a scandal you're familiar with, in which some sports figure, executive, politician, or celebrity didn't just get caught doing something they shouldn't have been doing. They got caught because they did something really stupid. I bet you said to yourself, "What an idiot. I could have gotten away with that." And I'll confess, that's normally my reaction as well. But these are typically smart, successful people with plenty of resources. How do they end up shooting themselves in the foot? In this podcast, we're going to look at Socrates' answer. And his answer is as bizarre as it is interesting. Now, I'm going to be candid in saying that I've never liked the traditional answer to the question, why should any of us worry about whether our actions are right or wrong? We shouldn't do what's wrong because it will hurt other people or isn't nice or people won't like us or we'll get a bad reputation. If you believe in an afterlife, it's about avoiding punishment. If you believe in reincarnation, doing wrong will carry some pretty serious karma. The problem with these answers, for me, is, to be blunt, they aren't selfish enough. Look, we live in a world that makes selfishness a virtue. And there's no question about what you can get by lying, cheating, stealing, and treating other people badly. Money, power, a sex, drugs, rock and roll lifestyle. Our culture tells us daily that we need to look out for number one. And if we don't, we're losers. So my attitude is that if we want ethics to be taken seriously in that kind of culture, our strongest argument needs to be similarly selfish. Fortunately, there is such an argument, and it's been advanced for a couple thousand years, although it's admittedly one of the strangest claims in the history of philosophy. No matter what tangible benefits we can get from lying, cheating, and treating others badly, the problem is that at the same time, we ourselves get seriously harmed. The most selfish way to advance our interests, then, is to act ethically. Even if you know nothing about philosophy, I'm sure you've heard about the thinker who made this claim, the ancient Greek thinker Socrates. And yes, Socrates really meant it. Being unethical harms the doer. Before getting into the specifics of Socrates' ideas, however, I need to explain something about his personal situation, because this shows that Socrates wasn't just spinning out some theory. He was so convinced that vice harms the doer, he himself refused to do what he was certain was wrong, even though it cost him his life. Socrates is an interesting figure for several reasons. For one thing, he represents the rare case of a major philosopher who never wrote down a word. We know about his ideas primarily through the writings of his pupil Plato, who makes Socrates the main figure in most of his dialogues. For another, Socrates was an eccentric character in ancient Athens, having come to believe he had a mission to encourage people to live a moral life. Socrates did this by approaching fellow Athenians and engaging them in conversations that challenged their deepest beliefs. For example, he'd ask someone what the most important thing in their life was. If they answered power, for example, Socrates would ask for an explanation. When they responded, Socrates would ask for more, pursuing every point of the answer, trying to show the problems with the other person's thinking. Back and forth it went until Socrates had convinced this individual about the importance of moral virtue. This Socratic method of question, answer, question, answer is still used by many teachers, especially in law schools. It's also true that there were probably lots of times when the person Socrates was questioning simply walked away exasperated by his strange fellow Athenian. Socrates was relentless. No doubt his insistent back and forth could be really annoying. In fact, I think that being annoying is one of the main reasons Socrates got executed. Since this relates directly to his idea that wrongdoing harms the doer, it's worth taking a couple of minutes to recall what happened to him and why. Socrates lived in Athens at a time when a couple of important things were going on that had a hand in his death. First, Athens was a democracy, although only for native male Athenians. And one of the ways you made a name for yourself was in the public assembly. If you had the money, you could learn how to do this by studying with one of the teachers called the Sophists, who taught rhetoric, the art of public speaking. The less reputable Sophists, however, taught how to fool people with deceptive reasoning and logical tricks. That's why being called a sophist is no compliment. Some Athenians saw no difference between what Socrates and the sophists were doing. Second, for most of Socrates' adult life, Athens and Sparta were at war. At one point, the controversial Athenian military and political leader Alcibiades, who had a close relationship with Socrates, betrayed Athens and went over to Sparta. When Sparta ultimately won, Socrates' connection with Alcibiades would have been a liability. Between that, confusing Socrates with the sophists, and what was seen as Socrates constantly challenging Athens' traditions, some conservative Athenians no doubt saw him as partly responsible for the city's defeat. He was charged with impiety and corrupting the young, capital offenses. The trial is described in Plato's Apology. The Greek word apologia, however, means defense speech, not apology. Apologizing was the last thing Socrates did. Socrates' defense amounted to questioning his accusers and analyzing the charges, which he quickly showed were baseless. He argued that he was really the victim of the long-standing prejudice I just described. At this point, everyone would have expected Socrates to bring in his wife and children and plead for his life. He refused, so the jury took its first vote about guilt or innocence. It was close, 280 to 221, but the jury found him guilty. The next step in trials like this was for both the accusers and the accused to propose punishments. The jury would then vote on which to accept. Socrates' accusers asked for death, likely as a way of underscoring his idea of how ridiculous the charges were. Socrates proposed what he thought was the only appropriate thing he deserved for having spent his life trying to encourage Athenians to virtue. Free meals for life. When the jury reacted as you'd expect, he considered the idea of imprisonment or exile, but rejected both. Socrates' rich friends told him they'd pay for a steep fine, which is what Socrates ultimately proposed. The vote went against him again and was even less close this time, 360 to 141. In other words, 80 people who had voted not guilty now voted death, likely because they felt insulted. As I said, I think Socrates was executed partly for being annoying. Now, I'm sure lots of us would question Socrates' decision to conduct his defense as he did, but let's not get into that. Socrates' execution had to be delayed until the completion of an Athenian religious mission. And we learn from Plato's dialogue entitled The Crito that Socrates could have escaped. However, believing that escaping would be wrong, Socrates refused to leave. If he did, he was convinced he would be harming himself in some critical ways. At stake here is what Socrates calls that part of ourselves that is improved by just actions and destroyed by unjust actions. Today we'd probably call that our character, that part of ourselves that essentially defines who we are. Now here's the most important part of his thinking. Socrates identifies two specific ways we're harmed. First, we lose the ability to have our desires satisfied. Nothing is ever enough. We constantly want more. And whatever it is that we desire, power, fame, money, love, sex, success, becomes the driving force in our personality. That is, the first kind of harm that Socrates points out involves not the mind, but our feelings of desire and satisfaction. The point at which we are satisfied by money, sex, power, or whatever else, is to a large extent a psychological matter, not a physical or an intellectual one. And in Socrates' mind, we lose the ability to be satisfied and are driven by our desires in a way that ends up being self-destructive. Second, our cognitive capacities also take a hit. Our ability to perceive reality accurately is weakened. In particular, we get worse at assessing risk. We also get really good at rationalizing whatever we need to do to get what we want, despite any harm our actions might do to other people, or even to ourselves. Or, to put Socrates' ideas in the most practical, matter-of-fact way, engaging in seriously unethical behavior makes us greedy and stupid. Ultimately, this is a self-destructive combination. We can't say no to what we want. We go to the well one time too often, and we fail to accurately assess the risks of being caught. Maybe it's cheating in a business deal or on our taxes. Perhaps it's lying in a relationship thinking we know how to fool our partner because we've done it so many other times. We're sure we can get away with it again and have whatever we want. Except, it turns out, we're so damaged we've misread the risks. Instead of being more careful, we get less careful and get caught. That's what Socrates means by saying vice harms the doer. And that's why he doesn't escape from jail. He is sure that if he does, knowingly doing something seriously wrong, he'll be changed in a fundamental and negative way. Socrates takes it to be an absolutely certain, observable fact that when we do something wrong, we are hurt by it. He thinks that no one can be strong and fully healthy. No one can be in total control of our actions and have a clear perception of reality without moral virtue. To his idea, unethical people lack critical capacities and strengths. Socrates sees them as genuinely unhealthy and weak, and they are made that way by their wrongdoing. And as far as I can tell, he's absolutely right. Think of all the smart, talented people who have been the authors of their own undoing. People who, on paper, were too smart to get caught, but made crucial mistakes and shot themselves in the foot. Once you start looking at things the way Socrates does, it's easy to find examples of what he's talking about. Now, I've presented this idea to a number of very bright students over the years, and if you're like them, maybe you're politely nodding your head like you agree. But inside, you're saying, "Yeah, I can see why those bozos got caught. But I'm smarter than that. I wouldn't make the same mistakes. I could get away with things." And I'll be completely honest, that was my reaction when I first started wondering if what Socrates said actually made sense. So let me tell you what happens next when I discuss this with students. After we talk about Socrates' ideas a bit, I ask my class to pick a high-profile scandal involving a very smart person. I then say, "For the next 15 minutes, we're in a morality-free zone. I want to hear your best ideas about how this person should have handled their situation so that they wouldn't have been caught." Very quickly, students come up with great ideas. They can see the risks and how to avoid them. They anticipate problems. They know when to cut their losses and not go too far. They have a plan in place for what to do at the first sign things go south. They very quickly cover all the bases. And then I say, "Person X was at least as bright as you. Why didn't they see things the way you did? For you, it's just a fun intellectual exercise. Nothing tangible was on the line. For them, something important in their life was at risk. Their reputation, important relationships, money, success. They had far more motivation than you do not to make mistakes, yet they did. Why?" Because Socrates is right. Vice harms the doer. No matter how smart you are, once we get in the middle of things, we don't see our mistakes. We don't assess the risk of being caught accurately. We take foolish chances. We get careless. Of course, my students always come up with some interesting ways to push back. The most common is that even if this is a real syndrome with genuine harm, if you're rich and powerful enough, you may be able to escape serious punishment. And unfortunately, that's true. However, even then, because of your greed and stupidity, you've been found out as the kind of person you are. And that's going to be a defining factor in your relationships with people. Honest people won't want to have anything to do with you. If they have to, they won't trust you. The people you'll be stuck with are other selfish, unscrupulous people like yourself who will be trying to take advantage of you as much as you're trying to take advantage of them. Now that's a formula for a happy life. So what's today's practical takeaway? Being unethical makes you greedy and stupid. Think about it. Fortunately for us, Socrates isn't the only person who floated such an idea. In another episode, we'll look at a similar idea from a very different kind of thinker, the 4th century Christian St. Augustine. In a later podcast, we'll find even more support in the research of a 20th century psychologist, Abraham Maslow. Thanks for listening. I'm Professor Thomas White, and this has been Philosophy for the Real World.